Hey everyone, welcome back to the Ebb and Flow Birth Show. This is the first episode of the new year, 2024, and it is another special episode. So I was interviewed on the Mama Stay Fit podcast, and I'm going to be sharing that episode with you all today if you do not happen to listen to that podcast. So Gina and Roxanne from Mama Stay Fit interviewed me about my birth stories and then about doula work and how doulas can support C-sections and VBACs. So it was a great conversation to have, and I am excited for you all to hear it. Again, if you don't listen, please check out the Mama Stay Fit podcast with Gina and Roxanne from Mama Stay Fit. Welcome to the podcast where we get into the real and raw of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. My name is Hannah Gill. I'm a VBAC mom, doula, and birth educator, and I help women discover their options and harness their inner power to have the experiences they desire. I'm here to support you through the ebbs and flows of these transformative years so we can have open and honest conversations about the hard, the messy, and the beautiful parts of motherhood. This is the Ebb and Flow Birth Show.
Welcome to the Mama Stay Fit podcast, Birth Story Friday. In this episode, Hannah is going to be sharing her two birth stories. The first was an unplanned C-section, and her second was a VBAC. Because of her experiences, she became a childbirth educator and birth doula, and now offers online education courses for families that are looking to have a vaginal birth after C-section, and also doulas to help educate them on how they can better support their families during a C-section and during a vaginal birth after C-section, also known as VBAC. Welcome to the Mama Stay Fit podcast. This is Gina, perinatal fitness trainer and birth doula.
And this is Roxanne, labor and delivery nurse and student midwife.
And this is the Mama Stay Fit podcast, where we empower you on your prenatal fitness, birth, and postpartum return to fitness journey.
Our podcast shares how to move throughout your pregnancy to stay strong and comfortable. Pain is not a requirement of pregnancy. Understand the science of birth and how to approach recovery after birth.
We share our personal experiences as mothers navigating the stage of life, plus our professional expertise as birth workers and fitness professionals.
Our goal is to help you feel confident as you navigate the perinatal timeframe for an empowering pregnancy, positive birth, and postpartum journey.
We are glad to have you with us on this journey and that you've chosen us to support you. Welcome to the Mama Stay Fit podcast. In this birth story, we have Hannah, who's going to be sharing her C-section and her VBAC birth story. And she's also going to be sharing what you can do to support a birth as a doula if you are supporting a C-section or a VBAC. So thank you so much for being here, Hannah.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
So how did you prepare for your first birth?
So my first birth, I did what the majority of people do. I went and found an OB at a hospital that people in my area recommended. I took a hospital birth class, and that's pretty much all I did. And I had planned to go unmedicated the first time around, but I didn't really do much to prepare for that. I took what the hospital called an advanced labor class, which was like a two-hour class to kind of help you prepare for unmedicated birth. I didn't know what a doula was at this time, so I didn't have a doula. I didn't know what a birth center was, so I chose a hospital. And I just thought I was going to go into labor, walk into the hospital, and go unmedicated, and everything would be fine. But when labor actually started, I was very thrown off by how intense my contractions were, like 100% right away. I was kind of thinking that what people said was, oh, they'll gradually build over time. Like, you might have contractions for a few weeks leading up to labor, and then they'll get stronger and closer together. But mine started right away, very intense, about 5 minutes apart. So, and this was at 39 plus one. I had a membrane sweep the day before that, and my contractions started the next day. And as soon as I got to the hospital, I told them I needed an epidural as soon as we got admitted. And I was about 3 centimeters when we got there, and I got the epidural right away, took a nap pretty much, and progressed very quickly. By the time I was about 9 centimeters, my OB had asked if I wanted to have her break my water, and I just said, sure, that's fine, get us to 10 centimeters, even though I wasn't progressing slowly or anything like that. I was progressing very quickly. So after she broke my water, I got to about 10 centimeters very quickly, and we waited for a while for me to push. I just kind of rested for a little bit longer till my OB was able to come back. And then we started pushing, but my epidural was so strong, I had no feeling whatsoever like to push effectively. I couldn't tell I needed to push. I literally felt nothing because it was so strong. So we pushed for about 4 hours almost, about 3.5, 4 hours before opting for a C-section. And we didn't know it at the time, but my son was asynclitic and I had an epidural and I was just on my back and just in that position, that's not going to really help baby get into a good position. And he just kept coming down and then going back up every time I pushed. And again, I wasn't pushing effectively because I had an epidural. But it wasn't until the C-section portion where I started experiencing what I described as like a traumatic birth. And it was mainly because during my C-section, I felt a lot more pain than I realized I would feel. And I didn't think that was normal. They told me I would feel pressure, but to me, it felt very, very painful. So I had to have my husband tell the anesthesiologist that I needed something additional to help with the pain. And I didn't really, they didn't put me under anything like that, but I kind of fell asleep during the process. And I don't remember really hearing my son cry or meeting him for the first time. So I don't have a lot of good memory about my C-section. And then the immediate postpartum was very, very difficult as far as the pain goes. And just being so mentally unprepared for a C-section was the hardest part for me, that I was shocked and I didn't realize that that was going to be the way my birth turned out, because I'd never really thought about it. It wasn't on my radar before that. So that was really the hardest part, was just not being prepared for how to handle a C-section and that that would be a possibility for my birth.
Was there any pushback when you requested more pain medication? I've sometimes heard stories where folks are essentially dismissed if they are expressing that they're feeling a lot of extra pain. Was it like pretty quick for them to remedy that?
It was right away. I was crying and telling my husband, like, this really hurts. I need something. And he told the anesthesiologist, and right away I kind of dozed off. So I'm assuming whatever they gave me, it did help, but it also made me not really coherent with what was happening.
So you're a doula now. What advice do you have for somebody that is a doula and is supporting like an unplanned or a labored C-section?
So if possible ahead of time, have your client make a C-section plan. And I know there's a lot of pushback against that. Like, well, if we plan for it, it's going to happen type of thing. But just making them aware that this is a possibility for anyone giving birth, that you may end up in a C-section. So if you know ahead of time how you want that to look and feel and be, especially if you have a doula that could potentially be in the OR with you, just having that conversation ahead of time. If you don't have that conversation ahead of time, then see if it's not a true crash stat emergency where the mom's going to be put under. See if the OR and the team is okay with you being back there, because that would have been such a benefit for me during my C-section to have someone there reassuring me and my husband, walking me through what was happening, and then also to be present with me while my husband was with my son. Because that's one of the main things I hear from women in C-sections, is that they feel alone, like no one's with them and they don't know what's happening. So if you're able to be back in the OR, really walk everyone through the process of what's happening and just have some reassurance there. And then also afterwards for postpartum with the C-section, just making sure everyone is okay, especially if it was an unplanned event and it was potentially traumatic or there was a lot of chaos happening, just kind of debrief afterwards to talk it through.
Do you think it would have been beneficial to have someone debrief with you, not only like shortly after the birth, but maybe like a week or so later?
Oh, yes, 100%. Because my experience, and I didn't go into a ton of detail, but it was very traumatic for me. I blamed myself. I thought it was my fault. And just having someone debrief and talk me through that and kind of walk through what happened and whether or not it would have been preventable, just knowing that it wasn't my fault, wasn't my baby's fault, and kind of having someone do like a birth processing session with me would have been wonderful.
So with your clients now, do you go over like C-sections plans with them? And is there anything like specific that you include in like a C-section plan when you're helping them prepare for their birth?
Yeah, so I do, if they're open to it, I have them do a regular birth plan and then a C-section plan, especially if it's like a first-time mom who may have never been through the process, or especially like a VBAC client, because there is the potential there that another C-section could happen. So some of the main things I include are, like, as far as if they want to breastfeed, having that skin-to-skin and breastfeeding in the OR as long as everyone is stable, and having that right away, because it's so important, not just for mom to not feel disconnected, but also for baby. We know that skin to skin right away is optimal. And then also a lot of logistics, and it's going to depend on the hospital, but if possible, having like a clear drape or a lower drape. And we know in some other countries, people are doing maternal assisted cesareans. And those are things to have and discuss with your team if it's possible, because you never know when they're going to start having those be the norm here. So those are the two main things I would say, is the immediate skin-to-skin and breastfeeding if wanted, and then either a clear or lower drape or the maternal assisted if possible.
Another time that I usually find is kind of that transition from when a C-section is called to when someone is actually getting a C-section. Is there a good way that you think somebody can ask, like, hey, do we have some time to just kind of go over like what to expect, or as opposed to feeling like you're being rushed to the next, like to the OR without any sort of opportunity to kind of like know what's going to be happening to you? Like, do you know like a good way to ask for that?
When I'm with my clients, I have not had a client yet that has gone from like planning for a vaginal birth and then having a C-section. But for me personally, and in my own personal experience, that's one way to know, like, is this truly an emergency where it has to be done now? Or is this just something that was unplanned and things are not progressing how we want them to progress? And with my clients, I always ask, like, okay, with any intervention and any next step is, okay, would you like a few minutes to discuss this? And I'll ask my clients this directly. I'm not going to ask their doctor, but I'll ask my clients, do you want a minute to discuss this? Because we had this on your birth plan. And do you want a minute to talk it over? And the clients usually do want to talk it over. And I always tell my clients ahead of time, like, ask the doctor to leave the room if possible, because we know that there's pressure if someone's sitting there staring at you while you're having these type of conversations. And then if they have specific questions for the doctor, I'll have them ask that and then just really kind of sit with them and make sure that not necessarily that the doctor is not, that they're providing like thorough answers and not just kind of glossing over the answers, because a C-section is a major surgery. So we should be able to go over all of this regardless of if they're supposed to read the consent form ahead of time. In the moment, it's much different. So really just taking our time if possible, because we know that there are those C-sections that aren't truly emergencies. They're just unplanned and they need to be discussed thoroughly ahead of time to make sure that we know the benefits and risks, and if it's really a necessary thing right now, or if there's other options we can consider.
So Roxanne, can you explain for someone to know, like, in the moment, like, this is like a true emergency versus like there's probably an opportunity to ask for some time to process?
Yeah, so there's a difference between like emergency C-sections and, as you said, like an unplanned C-section. And those are what we like call urgent. There is no reason that they need to be like rushed back to the OR like immediately. Sometimes they're like given some time to kind of process this option. And even like an option to be like, hey, like, this is where we think it's going, but we can wait a little bit longer and it's safe to wait a little bit longer if you want to see if this vaginal delivery is going to happen. A true emergent C-section is something where they like see something happening and baby is born within like less than 10 minutes, ideally less than 10 minutes. And they're like ripping cords out of the walls. They're like throwing a consent in your face saying like, this is what's happening. Like, this is for either your life or baby's life. Like, we need to get this baby out as soon as possible. But they are not super common, as you know as well. Mm-hmm. Usually the reasons for this, it's like placental abruption. So the placenta has detached from the uterine wall too early. The uterus has ruptured. The cord has prolapsed, or baby's heart rate is down and it's like so low and not coming back up that they need to get baby out before that, like their fetal reserve or the amount of oxygen that they have like saved up in their gas tank runs out. And then the baby just continues to go downhill. So all of those reasons are really the only true emergent really reasons where they need to get that baby out like ASAP. most of the case, it's like an urgent. So you have that time to ask all of those questions. And then like, if you don't have an epidural, that is a good time to be like, hey, like, I don't have an epidural. We're moving towards a C-section. Can I get a spinal? And then like be able to be awake for that procedure and like going over all of those options. I feel like can also help with the fact like processing, like giving that time to ask all of these questions in that period before having to go back to the OR, I feel like can help a lot with like being able to process what is happening and why it's happening, and having all of those questions answered versus like, hey, we recommend a C-section, let's get you back there. It's not emergent, but like, hey, like you're probably good, right?
I think that's what you said is really beneficial because for my C-section, it wasn't an emergency. It was just, I had been pushing for 4 hours and we opted for a C-section, but I didn't know what questions to ask. I didn't have anyone there like helping me like, oh, well, do you want to talk about this? I didn't even know what to look out for as far as the C-section goes. So like Roxanne said, having those questions asked and like explained to you, even if I was 100% like on board and okay with the C-section, it would have been help with the processing to really understand what was happening and why it was happening.
For me, the emergency, like true emergency C-sections that I've been a part of, you can tell from the energy of the room that this is not like a good opportunity to have a conversation. And so usually what I'm doing, like they're pulling cords out. I'm like quickly trying to tell like the mom like what's going on or like what she can probably expect to happen. I'm not telling her like what's happening because I don't want to diagnose her or misunderstand the situation medically. I might like bring up like, hey, do you know what's happening? And then that kind of prompts usually the nurse to be like, hey, just so you know, like baby's heart rate's really low. It's not going back up. Like we're really recommending a C-section right now. Or the provider will even start talking like, hey, this is what we're seeing. We need to bring you down right now. And then at that point, once everyone's kind of hovering around her, I direct my attention to the partner and I'm like, hey, when you get down there, like get your stuff on as fast as possible so that you can go into the OR. They'll come out and grab you when you're ready. This is what you'll probably see before you walk in. Just know that they're probably going to start before you walk into the room. They may or may not grab you. You may be waiting in the hallway. Like hopefully they get you at some point. So I'm kind of like letting them know a bunch of things so that they know what to do to support afterwards. Because in, I would say 9 times out of 10, I'm not allowed in the OR as a doula. But if there is an opportunity to talk, it usually is pretty obvious because everyone's very casual. Like they're just kind of like, you know what? I just don't think this baby's going to come out. You've been pushing for a long time. Like, or, you know, you're really not progressing anymore. Usually the provider's like very calm with what they're talking about. Like they're like very slowly moving. And at that point, it's like, hey, like, do you want some time to process this? To kind of go over like what's happening? Is that all right if they take some time? And then after they kind of talk through some stuff like, hey, like, could you guys walk them through like what they could expect from now until they meet their baby? And then usually the provider or the nurse will kind of start to go through like, hey, like, you know, this is the stuff we're going to do to get you prepped. And then we're going to bring you back to the OR. At that point, this is what's going to happen. And I usually find that that's like really helpful. And then usually just reassuring the family like, hey, like, this is the path that your birth has to take right now. It doesn't mean that you did anything wrong. Like you didn't fail in any way, and just kind of take that guilt away. Cause you do get a lot of like, oh, there's so many unnecessary C-sections. And I tell my clients, I'm like, look, like at the moment that people get C-sections, they need them. Like whether or not we maybe could have done something prior to prevent it is like not like important right now. But like the moment that somebody is being like wheeled back to the OR, it's a necessary C-section at that point. Now, it's not necessarily an emergency, but if hopefully that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So how was kind of processing your birth? Because I know after your first birth, you became a childbirth educator and then started preparing for a VBAC with your second pregnancy. Can you kind of talk about that transition?
Yeah. So during my postpartum, I had, from my birth experience, I had postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, PTSD, but I didn't realize all this until about 6 months postpartum when I just had things happening and I was like, there is something wrong. I need to go talk to someone. I was having flashbacks about the birth. I was crying about it. There were times where I blamed my son for being in the wrong position. I was like, this was his fault. And I knew that was not logical and not a normal thing to be thinking. So around 5 or 6 months postpartum, I finally went and got some help. I spoke to a therapist to process everything. And she was really the first person, because she wasn't my family member or friend, just saying things to make me feel better, she was really the first person that acknowledged what happened during my birth and acknowledged that it was traumatic for me. It was in that time that I realized, like, this wasn't my fault. This wasn't my son's fault. So it took a lot of processing for me. And the reason I wanted to become a childbirth educator was I thought the birth class I took through the hospital, I was like, this completely failed me in preparing for anything that could have potentially happened as far as complications or unexpected outcomes. So I thought, well, I want to become a childbirth educator and really educate first-time moms on everything that could happen and how to prepare for that. And I know it's not possible to really prepare for every unexpected thing, but at least know that it's a possibility and how you would handle it if it did happen and what you would want to see out of that experience. I didn't really know the term VBAC at the time. I just thought, oh, people just go on and have like a vaginal birth after this. And I never knew like the pushback that came with VBAC and the lack of support many, many women have. And when I started researching, I was kind of shocked to see that this wasn't just a normal thing that people did all the time. And I started researching my options. And before I was even pregnant with my second, I was researching everything I possibly could because I just knew I couldn't let that happen again with my experience. And I never wanted to feel that way again. I was looking into my options in my state. I'm in Indiana and we have birth centers here, which I didn't know about the first time. But in Indiana, it's illegal to VBAC in a freestanding birth center. So there's obviously like the legalities around VBAC. Even in hospitals, there's some hospitals that have VBAC bans or providers that are not supportive of VBAC. So I was researching my options and I thought, well, I know I'm going to have a doula. So I started interviewing doulas before we even conceived, just so I knew, like, as soon as I got a positive test, I would know who I wanted to hire. And I knew birth centers was off the table. So then I looked into home birth and there are some home birth midwives in our area. But again, there's some that won't take a primary VBAC. So if you've never had a vaginal birth, they won't support a VBAC until you've had one. And then there are others that won't take VBAC at all. And the closest one I could find was a home birth midwife that was about 2 hours away. With how quickly my first labor progressed, even with the 4 hours of pushing, I just didn't feel comfortable like going that far for my appointments. And some women would be okay with it, but I personally wasn't. So I opted for staying with my OB that I was with before. And because I completely trusted her, she did everything she possibly could to not have me have a C-section the first time around. And when I discussed a VBAC with her, she was like, oh yeah, like 100%, that's what we can do. And there was never pushback and never any like stipulations or requirements that I had to meet in order to have a VBAC other than like, obviously I couldn't have like placenta previa or anything like that, that would obviously opt for a C-section. But she was so supportive. The only thing that she was not open to was a vaginal breech birth. And so I interviewed some other OBs in the area and found an OB I could transfer to if my baby ended up being breech, because he was open to that. So had all my ducks in a row in the preparing, and I hired my doula as soon as I found out I was pregnant. And she has attended many, many VBACs, so I felt very confident having her as my doula. And then the one thing I really wanted to prepare for the second time around was I wanted to make sure I could go unmedicated. That was like 100% the thing I wanted to do regardless of where I gave birth. I ended up taking like a hypnobirthing course called HypnoBabies because I knew the mental preparation would be 100% more difficult for me than the physical prep. I was confident in my body's ability to birth, but I knew that the first time around, like, my mind prep was not there as far as dealing with unmedicated birth. So I practiced my whole pregnancy, listened to my tracks, and just made sure that I could get through that. And I had some bumps along the way preparing for my VBAC. I had placenta previa partial early in my pregnancy. Thankfully, that resolved. I had some subchorionic hemorrhaging multiple times through my pregnancy. I was GPS positive. My baby was breech at one point. I was like, okay, all the things that I don't want to happen are happening. So I didn't get discouraged though. I kept pushing forward because I knew everything was going to work out and I wasn't going to let it stress me out. But thankfully I did all the things I could to get my baby to flip. My baby was head down. Everything was good there. And then even though I was GBS positive, I talked to my OB about it because I had planned to labor at home as long as possible. She was still fine with that. And that's what I did. But my labor started a little bit differently with my VBAC. It did not start with contractions. It started with some very, very heavy bleeding with no other signs of labor. So my first thought was, okay, I'm having like a placental abruption or like a uterine rupture were my first two thoughts. And I called my OB that morning. It was 40 plus two. I hadn't gotten any cervical checks at this point. I didn't want anything like that to kind of stress me out on where I was dilated or anything like that. So I didn't know how far along I was as far as dilation or effacement went. But I called my OB and I was like, I'm having some really heavy bleeding. That's more than I would like. It's like concerning on how much bleeding is there. So she just said, okay, come in. I'm the one that's here this morning. So we'll just come in and monitor you and kind of see what's happening. Again, at this point, I was not feeling any contractions whatsoever. I just had my bleeding. My water hadn't broken or anything like that. So I went in and the nurse and my OB said, yeah, our main concern right now is there could be an abruption happening. So they monitored me, checked. I was about 4 centimeters at this point. I was having contractions. I just couldn't feel them. I don't know if that was because they just weren't intense or if I was just prepared this time around, but I couldn't feel them. The bleeding had slowed down once we were monitored for a little while. So they said it could have possibly been a partial, but because the bleeding slowed down, they weren't majorly concerned. So they had us stay for about an hour because I was going to go back home. I was like, okay, we're fine. Like, I'm going to go back home and wait for my contractions to pick up. But after about an hour, I had progressed another centimeter. And I was like, okay, this is progressing a little bit faster than I was expecting it to. So we were already there. And then I was starting to feel them more. So I was like, okay, we'll stay. We'll be admitted. Like, we're here. And I'm progressing quickly for what I thought. This was about like 8 a.m. when we decided, okay, we're gonna stay and be admitted. So we got back to our labor and delivery room and we started like my antibiotics for my GBS. And it was a big concern to me. I didn't want to be hooked to anything. So I got my antibiotics and I had them detach everything. I didn't want the IV on me. And I had wireless monitoring so I could get up and move. And by the time that got done, we got back there. It was about, I think around 10 a.m. is when like the antibiotics were done and all of that. And at that point, I was about 5 centimeters. My water broke when I got up and started moving around. So I texted my doula and I let her know, like, hey, my water broke. I'm 5 centimeters. Contractions are starting to pick up where I have to, like, kind of focus on them. So I told her, I was like, we'll just see what happens. Like, I'm only 5 centimeters. And my contractions aren't super intense yet, but they're starting to pick up. And then I felt like I had to go to the bathroom. So I went to the toilet to labor for a little bit because I tried laying with like a peanut ball between my legs and listening to my hypnosis tracks, but the peanut ball was just really intense and I was so uncomfortable with having like my headphones on. I was just bothered by it. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go to the toilet and labor there. And I'm the type of person where, this is probably TMI, but we're all birth people here. I have like really bad bowel movements my entire labor, like all the time. It's just constant. So toilet was just convenient for me anyway. I was like, I'm going to the bathroom anyway. Might as well stay here. So I was laboring on the toilet for about 30 to 45 minutes. And my husband was getting me washcloths, rubbing my shoulders. I was just kind of swaying. And at that point, I started getting really hot and sweaty and shaky. I had texted my doula right before I went to the toilet. And I told her, I was like, contractions are picking up. Like, I think you should probably head this way because they're getting a little bit more intense. And that was around 11 a.m. She was like, okay, yeah, I'll be there. And by the time I got to the toilet around that time in that 30 to 45 minutes, I told my husband, I was like, I need an epidural. Like, I can't do this. I need an epidural right now. And he was like, but you're doing so well. Like, Julie, our doula, she's not here yet. Let's wait for her to get here. We can kind of reevaluate and see. I was like, okay. I was so annoyed. Like, in my head, I knew. I was like, I'm probably in transition, but I just rolled my eyes at my husband, like, fine, like, we'll wait, whatever. So our nurse came in to check on us because we had been in, like, the bathroom for about 45 minutes. She was like, are you guys okay in here? Our nurse was named Morgan. I was like, Morgan, I need an epidural, please. Like, I need an epidural now. And she was like, but you don't have your IV. Like, it will still take us like 20 minutes to get the IV running with fluids prepped for the epidural. So she was like delaying it too. I mean, I was coping well through it, but in the moment, I didn't feel like I was.
Everyone knew.
Everyone knew except me. I was in denial. I was like, no. And then like 2 seconds later, Julie.
I will get it.
Yeah. 2 seconds later, Julie, our doula, walked in and was like, Julie, I need an epidural. Like, why are my contractions on top of each other, like back to back? Like, why are they like this? And she said, because your body is working to bring your baby here. And she said, how long have you been on the toilet? And I said, about 30, 45 minutes. She said, well, let's do like a position change and kind of see if that helps like alleviate some of the pressure you're feeling. So trying to get off that toilet, I was like, you are crazy if you think I am moving off this toilet right now. But she guided me and helped me, and we moved to the shower because I just really needed some relief as far as like the feelings and the pressure was going. And she was running the water on my back, and the funny thing is my husband forgot to pack his birth bag, so he got in the shower in sweatpants. So he was like, his sweatpants are soaking wet. I'm holding on to him and swaying. And as soon as I stood up and got in the shower and was like vertical, like I started bearing down, and I was making those grunting noises. And the nurse ran in and she was like, maybe we should like make our way to the bed. Because it was clear I was pushing already, and I hadn't been checked since my water broke. So I was pushing, and when they did end up checking me, I was like, sure, like check me, fine, whatever. I want to make sure like I'm not pushing against a cervix that's not completely open, because I don't want to have like swelling or anything like that. And I was complete, and I had like a slight cervical lip. And my doula said, well, maybe if we get on hands and knees, that'll kind of help reposition baby a little bit to get that lip pushed back. So again, I didn't want to move positions, because when you're in the middle of transition, like you don't want to do anything. But we did end up moving to the bed. I got on hands and knees, and I was pushing at this point. I was like, there's no controlling it. It's just happening. I was pushing for about 15 minutes in hands and knees, and I tried like lunging a little bit. And my daughter was like coming down and going back up like my son was. And at that moment, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, really? And then my doula suggested, well, like, are you comfortable getting on like a squat bar? And I was like, I cannot hold myself up. I cannot get in a squat. My legs will give out. But my doula and my husband both supported me with the squat bar. And within 5 minutes and probably 2 contractions, my daughter was out. And she came out so quickly. She had no head molding. Like, she was just out. It was intense. But the funny thing was, is my doula had mentioned this in one of our prenatal sessions, that if you use the squat bar, make sure when you pull your baby to your chest, like you pull under the bar, because the umbilical cord will still be attached, obviously, before the placenta comes out. But I was trying to like bring my baby over the bar, and then we were getting all tangled with the umbilical cord, and I was just so happy. I was like, oh, I did it. Like, I had my V back, so let me just get my baby on my chest right now. And that logistically was an issue. But yeah, so she came out really fast, and my entire labor was 4.5 hours from first contraction I felt to when she was born. So much faster than my first, and it was a very intense 4.5 hours.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, everyone knew. Everyone was aware of what was happening. You even knew, but you were in denial.
Denial is more than just a river in Egypt.
I was like, this is where women, like transition is where you say like, I can't do this anymore, even though you are doing it. And I'm so glad like everyone kind of delayed it. And it's like, oh, like you still need to be hooked to your IV for 20 minutes. And it all worked out.
Yeah, the fact that you didn't like run to the edge of the bed and curl up in a ball, like I'm ready, like it would be a clue to me as a doula that this is just you coping. Like, I mean, you want it, but you don't really want it. This is just like a coping mechanism for you.
Yes, yeah.
And if we give you something else, you'll accept it. And you're like, fine, I'll get in the shower.
The shower, yes. Or like the tub is
usually. Yeah, because like if you really wanted it, you'd be on the edge of the bed, yeah. Like curling over, like, right. Do it now.
I'll call for myself.
Yes, yes.
But it sounds like a huge difference between this birth and the last was one that you were moving the whole time. It sounded like they both progressed pretty quickly. And I don't know exactly how your OB was for your first birth, but it sounds like this one was like incredibly supportive of the birth like vision that you had like fully, which is amazing. And I like to think that a lot of providers are like that. And I want to hope that a lot of providers are like,
yeah, if that's what you want to do, I could support you and make sure that you guys stay safe. And like, if you want to have a VBAC, like, let's do it. I'm sure that mentally helped a ton to know that your entire support team was on your side too.
I like to mention this too, because so we got there and my OB was one on call, but she had just gotten off a 24-hour call shift. And usually she specials her patients, so she'll come to the birth even if she's not on call. But because she had just been on call for 24 hours, we were both like go home and go to sleep type of thing. So I had never met the OB that attended my VBAC, but she ended up being so amazing and hands off and just like, I'm here when you need me type of thing. And that doesn't happen a lot when you have an on-call OB that you've never met before, especially with a VBAC and an unmedicated birth that they might not see often. So she was 100% supportive and hands off and just was there to catch my daughter when she came out. So
yeah, it sounds like that whole clinic is probably like very aligned in values with one another, which is awesome. So you came into birth work after your VBAC. What kind of advice do you have for a doula that is supporting a VBAC or a vaginal from birth after C-section? Let's say it's their first VBAC client, or maybe they've been supporting tons of VBACs. Like, what advice do you have?
So my number one thing would be helping your client process their previous births, because that mental block is such a big thing that can happen, especially if there was trauma surrounding the previous birth. So really helping them understand what happened and doing those fear releasings to make sure that doesn't come up again in the next birth. And my doula was great about doing this, because pushing was my biggest obstacle with my first birth. So in my mind, that was what I needed to get past in my VBAC. And she did so great in like supporting where she knew things took a turn in my previous birth. So during the pushing phase, she was just very hands-on and suggesting different positions. So she would help me with that progress. So really just helping process the previous birth, because to me, the mental prep is so much more important for a VBAC and even a repeat C-section, and making those really understand what happened before to kind of release and get rid of those mental blocks for the next birth. And then also for VBAC, especially if it's an out-of-hospital VBAC, is preparing for what it can look like if you do end up in the hospital. So I know a lot of women who are either doing like a VBAC at a birth center or a home birth, and this wasn't my case specifically, but knowing if a transfer is necessary, how to navigate that, because I know there's a lot of pushback for VBAC in general, and then also home birth or out of hospital birth. So knowing what you'll do as a doula when you go into that change of scenery and a change of location.
Yeah, absolutely. And also being able to, if you are doing out-of-hospital birth and your birth is, it's no longer safe for you to be home, like mentally being okay with knowing when to transfer and when it's okay to transfer. Because I have sometimes encountered that with HVACs where there's like a lot of resistance to transfer when it's like very obvious that it's like no one's going to die, but it's like this is not looking
right.
Like we need some more support with this birth. And so you have two freebies for folks as well if they are looking to have a VBAC for parents, and then also one for doulas. Could you share a little bit more about the services or the freebies that you offer?
Yeah, so the first one is the first three steps to VBAC guide, and that's for parents that are really wanting to just know like, okay, do I really want a VBAC? If I do, what are the first things I need to do to like make this a reality for me? That walks you through like kind of, like I said, the birth processing of the previous birth, finding educational resources on VBAC, and then narrowing down like where you want to birth and the type of provider you want are the first like three fundamental things that I think need to be done when preparing for a VBAC. So that guide walks you through that. And then the second one is my new doula tips VBAC, or new doula tips for VBAC and cesarean support. And that was requested because a lot of doulas I spoke with said their biggest obstacle when supporting their VBAC and cesarean clients are the fears that are surrounding their birth. So it just kind of gives some options for helping you guide your clients through fear releasing, some common fears that may come up and how you can address them as a doula, and resources you can give your clients to really overcome those fears.
Absolutely. Yeah, I usually find with some of my VBAC clients, if their prior birth was definitely not what they were expecting or planning, or if it was on the more traumatic side, is that some of them will have these like really long lists of things that they're doing during their pregnancy to prevent that experience again. And it's like, I'm going to see a chiropractor 8 times a week and I'm going to get massages. I'm going to work out every day. I'm going to eat like this specific diet. And they have this like really long, overwhelming list of things to do because they either blame themselves for what happened during their first birth. And they're like, it happened because I failed to do something. And then they're doing this really long list of stuff, but they don't work out the 8 times a week that they were hoping to. And then it becomes stressful because it's like, well, if I have a C-section again, it's because I failed. And so kind of helping them like release and process their prior birth and understand like it wasn't your fault. Are there things that we can do differently? Like I don't want them to feel helpless of like, good luck. Like, yes, there are things that we can do to help hopefully prevent a cesarean, but ultimately like you did the best you could with the information that you had, with the preparation that you did. And doing so much preparation that we're creating anxiety is also not going to be helpful. So helping them kind of navigate that has been like a big role of mine as a doula with my VBAC clients. And the more VBAC clients that you support, the more that have repeat C-sections or ones that have unplanned C-sections that let's say it was their first, it does just give you kind of more of the experience of like what to expect. But I think it's definitely worth like talking with somebody who's gone through it like firsthand to know, hey, this is what it felt like for me. And this is what I think somebody else can do to help someone manage or navigate that situation, I think is so beneficial. So I really appreciate you sharing your two birth stories with us and all of your advice for doulas and folks that are supporting these really unique birth experiences to make it a more positive experience for people, regardless of what path their birth does take.
Yeah, I think it's such an important area to discuss, especially because like you said, some women feel like if they don't do all the things that they're gonna fail their birth is kind of the mentality. But I always try to tell people too, like you can do all the things and it could still end up how you don't expect it to, or the person over here could do all the things and not have a VBAC, and then the person over here could not do anything and have a VBAC. So everyone's so unique in their births, and even between your own births are gonna be a very different journey.
Absolutely. I definitely feel like the most important thing for your birth is who you choose to support you, to include like your medical team, your non-medical team. So I really love that your VBAC guide includes such a big emphasis on choosing the provider that's best for you. And that'll be different for everybody. Everybody has different priorities for their birth. There's no best type of provider, but choosing someone that truly supports you and what you're wanting is probably going to be the most important thing to having a positive birth experience, regardless if it's a VBAC or a repeat C-section.
I agree.
So Hannah, where can people find you if they want to work with you as a doula? Like what areas do you support? And if you have any sort of like content or online courses that you offer, like where can folks find you to learn more?
Yeah, so I'm in Indianapolis, Indiana for in-person birth support. So I service central and southern Indiana. As far as where people can find me online, my website is ebbandflowbirthco.com. And then my Instagram is at ebbandflowbirthco. I also have a podcast called the Ebb and Flow Birth Show. I play on my business name there. But I do have some courses coming up next year. In January, I'll be launching my course for doulas for VBAC and cesarean support and how to have them learn and get more knowledge, especially new doulas that may have never supported one, to be more confident in supporting those clients. And then in the late spring, I'll have my VBAC parent course. So
that's awesome. And we'll link all of that down in the show notes as well, so that all of you that are listening can find Hannah very easily and learn a ton from her. So thank you so much, Hannah, for being on the Mama Stay Fit podcast and for sharing your birth stories and all your super helpful advice for doulas and for families that are navigating this birth experience.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure you like and subscribe to our channel so you get notified whenever we release new episodes. We release new educational episodes on Wednesdays and new birth stories every Friday.
If you're looking for more support during your pregnancy, you can follow our prenatal fitness programs and childbirth education courses. If you're looking for more support in the postpartum, you can check out our postpartum education courses as well as our postpartum fitness courses. If you're a professional, we offer both birth workers and fitness trainer courses that you can check out and earn CEUs while learning from us.
And as a thank you for listening to this episode, you can use Story 10 to get 10% off any of our online fitness programs and online education courses.
You just finished another episode of the Ebb and Flow Birth Show. For more, head over to ebbandflowbirthco.com or on Instagram at ebbandflowbirthco. As a reminder, this podcast is provided to you for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not a substitute for medical advice. Until next time, bye, friends.